George Bernard Shaw, the patron of this room, described the tone of various early Fabian meetings in the following manner. He said, "There was far too much equality and personal intimacy among the Fabians to allow of any member presuming to get up and preach at the rest in the fashion which the working classes still tolerate submissively from their leaders." Well, today I'm not presuming to preach to the members of the Philadelphia Society, particularly not about a topic on which many have strong feelings. However, since one of the purposes of the Society is to sponsor the interchange of ideas, I am going to defend what I believe to be a real alternative to the Great Society, even though some members of the audience may not be in agreement with my views. The subject of my remarks is a defense of what is commonly called revenue sharing or tax sharing. Revenue sharing is simply the sharing of federal income tax revenues with no strings attached with state governments. There are various schemes which have been devised to implement revenue sharing. The amount which will be passed on, the formula on which it will be divided, and other points all differ from one legislative proposal to the next. I am not going to defend any one particular proposal as the best one. What I hope to do, however, is to make the basic premises of revenue sharing tolerable to this group. The first point on which we can all agree, maybe the only one, is that we are not living in an ideal world. If we were, I don't think anyone would seriously advance revenue sharing as the best way for our society to meet its social obligations. But because we are living in a real world, we have to deal with a real political situation. Today, there are over 400 different grant and aid programs administered by the federal bureaucracy. The federal government is presently spending about $15 billion a year on these grant and aid programs. The overwhelming evidence of yesterday's and this morning's presentations is that this method of federal grant and aid assistance has been practically ineffective and politically deleterious to our federal system. If we agree on this, we must ask, in the words of our distinguished chairman, what are the alternatives? As conservatives, we can raise our voice against all federal spending on grant and aid programs, but in the practical political world, we will not stand a chance of repealing these measures. Another route is to look for an alternative that, one, has a chance of legislative enactment, and two, is more in sympathy with our federal system. I believe revenue sharing meets both criteria. The first question which must be dealt with in advocating revenue sharing is, why is it better than the current method? Here one could flippantly say that almost anything is better than the current method. But the current method merely, if the current method merely imposed federal standards on the states, it would be unpalatable enough to those who are committed to our federal system. But even more distasteful than the imposition of federal standards, to my mind, is the imposition of federal priorities. Thus, one reads of the case where a locality cannot get enough money from the federal government to finance the construction of a mental hospital, but it can get funds for the construction of a county golf course. One must wonder, where is the federal government's sense of priorities? The effect that these allocations have on state and local planning is enormous. Most of the federal grant and aid programs require the states to put up a part of the cost of the project in some form of matching funds. Theoretically, this is to assure that the states will have a real interest in the project. Actually, of course, if the state is able to get funds for golf courses but not able to get them for mental hospitals, it will be allocating its state budget on the basis of federal rather than of state-determined priorities. With revenue sharing, these disadvantages fall by the side. Under most plans, the funds would be distributed to the states for spending on any projects on any basis which they choose. The only string attached would be that general federal statutes be complied with in the spending of the money, accounting, etc. That this would give the states added flexibility in dealing with their local needs is usually unquestioned. And yet, various conservatives have attacked the revenue sharing scheme basically on two different grounds. The first criticism rests on the premise that it is unwise to tax at one level of government and to spend at another. This argument has a certain amount of validity in the theoretical world. It is conceivable that a governmental unit which has not had to raise its own tax revenue will not be as careful with spending it as if it had to raise the revenue itself. Yet, as I will attempt to show, we can counter this argument by treating revenue sharing as an interim measure on the road toward increased state and local tax efforts, while correspondingly reducing federal spending. Furthermore, it should be noted that revenue sharing simply entered into the state's budget as an item of revenue to offset the costs which the state administration will incur. Thus, if the state government is to be profligate with revenue sharing funds, it will also be so with state funds. This is possible, but unlikely, because I doubt that the electorate would stand for it. A second argument used against revenue sharing is that it would enable the federal government to turn off a single spigot and discontinue all federal aid to a state. This would be a mighty lever in the hands of Washington. This argument can be countered simply. If the dispensing authority for revenue sharing funds is in the hands of a committee consisting of representatives of all the different levels of government, this committee, or Council on Revenue Sharing, would be the only body to determine that funds could be cut off to a state when it was not complying with federal requirements. Having considered too briefly, I suppose, the main arguments against revenue sharing, one can still ask, other than administrative efficiency, what purpose will revenue sharing serve? If we look at it as a tool in the struggle to restore a semblance of balance to our governmental system, we can see that revenue sharing has a more important role to play than one might think. This is particularly true of revenue sharing tied in with a scheme of tax credits. For example, at least one bill, which was H.R. 5450 in the present Congress, has coupled revenue sharing with a federal income tax credit for all state and local taxes paid by the individual taxpayer. Thus, as one pays state and local taxes, his federal tax obligation decreases by as much as 40% in this particular bill. This provision of the bill will enable the states to increase their own taxes to make up part or all of the reduced federal tax burden which the individual would have to bear. Of course, not all states will increase their taxes. That they need not do so is the very basis of our federal system. The revenue sharing plan should only be looked on as an interim measure rather than as any kind of final legislative solution to correcting the imbalance among our levels of government. If we view it in these terms, one which will permit a redressing of the fiscal imbalance, we can consider it as part of a package which will encourage what Mr. Rose has described as independent action. For example, the tax credit provision of H.R. 5450 is closely related to tax credits for a variety of other purposes. This is an area that Dick Cornell discusses at great length in his publications. Among these purposes are tax credits for educational expenses, particularly higher education tuition. Anyone who's interested in higher education today must be seriously disturbed at the rate at which public higher education is subsuming private education. The comments of Professor Herberg yesterday and Professor Schuttinger this morning certainly bear this out. More and more assistance is going to state educational institutions, which are able to admit students at very low or no tuition while charging the costs off to the taxpayers. Clearly, it would be far more equitable to allow a tax credit for tuition which is paid to private institutions. There are other areas where tax credits could be introduced, such as for contributions to organizations in the independent sector, or the Human Investment Act, which provides tax credits for private industries' job training programs as a very real alternative to the war on poverty. If revenue sharing, and through it tax credits, represent a viable partial alternative to the Great Society, I would now like to address myself to the prospects for its legislative enactment. Revenue sharing is not a new concept, but the big impetus for it is basically new. Concurrently, opposition has arisen at an astounding rate. Some maintain that we cannot afford to implement revenue sharing at this time because of the expenses of the Vietnamese War. These people would use revenue sharing as an added attraction in our grab bag of grant and aid programs. There I borrow from Professor Friedman again. We, of course, plan on revenue sharing supplanting rather than supplementing the 400 federal grant and aid programs which presently exist. The other questioning of revenue sharing comes from those who are basically opposed to it, but recommend further study of the question. In this regard, it's interesting to note that there was a special presidential task force in late 1964 to study the question. Its report was never released by President Johnson, although what leaked to Edwin Dale of the New York Times indicates that the commission recommended in favor of the concept of revenue sharing. Further opposition can be expected from the government bureaucracies in Washington, whose staffs would, of course, be reduced by the new programs. As for the specific legislative strategy, it was outlined in a Wall Street Journal article several months ago. There it was stated that the Republican opposition will begin substituting block grants in various areas rather than continuing specific tied programs. Thus, Title I of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965, which is up for renewal next year, would see the Republicans offering a block grant in place of the specific tied assistance. It should be frankly admitted that the likelihood for a general revenue sharing plan being implemented in this Congress, and particularly one which ties revenue sharing to tax credit incentives for states to increase their own taxes, is admittedly not very bright, although a good number of Democrats have introduced revenue sharing bills in the Congress. In conclusion, let me state what the advantages of such a scheme would be. First, it would free up resources for the states to adjust their own tax levels. Secondly, it would release the competent specialists in the Washington bureaucracy to return to the states. There are some. And it would thus disperse the power in our whole system of government. It would also enable the states to meet their own needs on the basis of their own self-determined priorities, rather than on the basis of Washington's ideas of how they should be meeting their problems. Finally, it would reduce the Washington control over the local and state governments. Thus, I think that revenue sharing would be more consistent with a free society, while the present system of federal grants and aids is consistent with the great society. I open with a quotation from Shaw. I'm going to close with one from him also, which seems particularly relevant for anyone who presumes to present a specific legislative proposition to a group such as this. Shaw, in the same passage, wrote of the Infant Fabian Society, "It was at this point that we contracted the invaluable habit of freely laughing at ourselves, which has always distinguished us and which has saved us from becoming hampered by the pushing enthusiasts who mistake their own emotions for public movements." Thank you.